fear of a protracted trade war between the world's two biggest economies, China and the U.S., knocking the wind out of global stock markets Tuesday, the Dow dropped nearly 300 points, enough to wipe away the year's gain. Stocks across Europe and Asia tumbled as well. Fueling the anxiety, President Trump threatened to slap a 10% tariff on $200 billion worth of wide-ranging Chinese exports, on top of the tariffs on $50 billion in goods set to go into effect on July 6th.
Fujifilm sued Xerox for well over $1 billion over a failed $6 billion merger between the two companies. It said Xerox scrapped the deal under pressure from activist investors Carl Icahn and Darwin Deason. Both owned 15% of Xerox shares and said the merger undervalued the printer and copier company. The merger was scrapped on May 13th when Xerox, in a settlement with Icahn and Deason, agreed to install several new directors and replace its CEO, Jeff Jacobson.
Human rights abusers continue to serve on and be elected to the council. The world's most inhumane regimes continue to escape scrutiny. And the council continues politicizing and scapegoating of countries with positive human rights records in an attempt to distract from the abusers in their ranks. Therefore, as we said we would do a year ago, if we did not see any progress, the United States is officially withdrawing from the UN Human Rights Council.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It is June 20th. Glad to have you here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. It's 5:11 in the morning. Another business day getting underway as well. Lots on the program for you today. A little bit later, we will talk with Jack Cable of Chicago, the owner of Lightning Security. He is a global hacker who's starting his own business, giving cybersecurity advice to big companies, Fortune 500 companies, and even the Department of Defense. We will talk about bug bounty and tell you what that is coming up at about 5:40 this morning. Heather Long is here with us from the Washington Post today. We're going to be talking a little bit about trade and business. We'll bring in Heather momentarily, but first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, a little bit different story than it was yesterday. Futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later. Dow futures are up 120. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. Around the globe, markets generally higher in Asia as well. Markets climbing there close to a percent in some places in Europe. Markets also seem to be improving today as well, although my computer appears to have just stopped updating those numbers. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. General Electric will be dropped from the Dow Jones Industrial Average next week, ending the conglomerate's more than 100-year run in the 30-company blue-chip index. S&P Dow Jones Indices says that GE will be removed from the index before the open of trade next Tuesday. Its slot will go to Deerfield-based Walgreens Boots Alliance. Boston-based GE was an original member of the Dow Jones Industrials dating back to 1896. It had been a continuous member of the Dow since 1907. Its place among the most stable publicly traded U.S. companies has been shaky, however, in recent years. Business leaders are condemning the Trump administration's decision to separate children from parents who are accused of crossing the border illegally. The Business Roundtable, a lobbying group that includes the CEOs of Walmart, General Motors, Boeing, MasterCard, and others, released a statement yesterday, urging the immediate end to the policy. The group called for comprehensive immigration reform that protects DACA recipients who arrived in the U.S. as children. The group also doesn't want to curb legal immigration, which it says helps U.S. businesses. Business Roundtable has joined several other companies, including Microsoft and Airbnb, who have spoken out against the child-parent separations at the border. Front and center this morning, Heather Long, a Washington Post economics correspondent, and happy to have her back here on the program. Heather, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Good to be here.
So many things have happened in the last 24 hours. What would you say is the biggest of those? I mentioned there the Business Roundtable, and I have to say the I don't know if you had a chance to watch the National Federation of Independent Businesses yesterday, the speech with the president, and the applause lines there was a little unsettling. They're getting a little bit of blowback from that appearance by the president, aren't they?
It does seem that way. Certainly, he spent most of the speech speaking to those business leaders about immigration and immigration policies. I think most people thought he was going to speak about the tax law, speak about his accomplishments in the economy, and instead it turned into the hot speech of the hour on immigration. I will say the applause did seem to die down a little bit as the speech went on. He transitioned from tax policy into immigration, but there was still quite a bit of clapping as he talked about restrictions, heavy restrictions on immigration.
And that seems sort of counterintuitive to business. A lot of those small business owners probably hire a lot of immigrants, probably immigrants themselves. Not probably, they are, a lot of them. It seemed like a weird sort of mixing of the two sides there.
I think you're exactly right. Even in NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business's own surveys, people there, business leaders, are saying that their number one concern is the tight labor market, is that they cannot find enough workers to fill all the roles that they have. My own family, my sister was telling me that her summer pool didn't open, was delayed opening, because normally they have someone come over in the temporary guest worker program in the summer, a program that some of President Trump's own properties have used, and that has been restricted this summer. So, you know, there's starting to be a lot of tangible effects around the country, both big and small, in terms of getting enough workers.
We wanted to have you on this morning to talk primarily about trade and whether or not we're in a trade war yet with China. What is the when do we cross that threshold, if we haven't already?
If we end up putting another $200 billion tariffs on another $200 billion of Chinese goods, I think it's fair to say we will be in a trade war. That means that at that point, half of the goods we're importing from China will be subject to tariffs, and that's certainly on a scale that we haven't seen potentially since the 1930s, to have that many imports under pretty hefty tariffs by then. But the key thing is it hasn't happened yet. All of this is such a long process. So the first tariffs on China won't even go into effect until early July, July 6th. And these ones that he's just announced Monday night, there's not even a date set for when those will go into effect. Given the previous timelines, it looks like they wouldn't go into effect until, say, August, maybe even September. So this is a long process. It's clear that they're still trying to work some sort of deal out. But obviously the markets and many business leaders are starting to think that this trade war is a lot more likely than anyone wants.
Heather, when we come back, I want to talk about what might happen to short-circuit this, what might actually happen to forestall some of this stuff. But first, we need to take a break this morning. We're on with Heather Long from The Washington Post.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us. 5:23 now on The Opening Bell. Heather Long is with us this morning, a Washington Post economics correspondent. Before the break, Heather, we were talking about the trade dispute with China and when some of these tariffs might go into effect. And you mentioned something about working still on some sort of deal. What would that deal entail? What are they looking for?
Well, it seemed to get a little bit more complicated yesterday. One of President Trump's top advisors on trade is Peter Navarro. He's been pushing hard for these tariffs, and he got on the phone with reporters yesterday and went on Fox last night. And what most people thought would bring an end to this is that China would present President Trump with some sort of plan to buy more U.S. goods. So obviously President Trump's highly concerned with a trade deficit, the fact that the U.S. buys more from China than vice versa. But the Chinese already kind of did that. You know, in May they came to the White House and tried to present a plan to potentially buy up to $200 billion more a year in U.S. products. And Peter Navarro yesterday said that wasn't good enough. So that, I think that helps kind of exacerbate a lot of fears on Wall Street and through the business community that you know, that's what a lot of people thought would happen and would bring this to a close. And if that's not going to be enough, then what will be enough? That it really is kind of unclear, because there's so many different demands, so many different complaints from the White House about Chinese practices. But at the end of the day, how do you put together a deal when it just seems like different advisors are saying so many different things?
Yeah, and it begs the question, is there a clearer line of communication directly between Washington and China on this? Are they talking this out in a clear and open way? What you've just described makes it seem like they're not, perhaps.
I agree. Some of the sources we talked to mentioned that that communication has really broken down. President Trump felt basically affronted by when China retaliated on Friday for those first round of tariffs that President Trump put on just $50 billion. You know, then China punched back and said, okay, well, we're going to put tariffs on about $50 billion of U.S. products coming. So that's what just really set the president off, and that's how he came back Monday night and came out with this. Well, I'm going to put another tariffs on another $200 billion, and if you retaliate again, I'll put it on another $200 billion, which basically means all products from China, the United States would be subject to a tariff. At this point, again, what's changed in the last sort of 48 hours is just this doubling down and this belief that there doesn't seem to be anything that's going to hold President Trump back from a trade war at this point. Some have also been reporting in my paper, as well as the New York Times, that this trade strategy actually seems part in these immigration issues are linked together and now seem to be part of some sort of strategic messaging from the White House heading into the midterm election. So again, another reason that President Trump might not want to end this anytime soon.
I've heard more and more economists say that the impacts of all of this could be negative, very negative for global growth, and even perhaps wipe out the effect of the tax cuts in this country. Any truth to any of that?
I think that's a bit far-fetched in terms of wiping out the entire benefits of the tax cut. I mean, you can look at it a couple different ways. From the big picture, you know, the reality is, even though putting tariffs on, say, $500 billion of Chinese goods, that's a lot, but that's still a pretty small drop in the bucket for the entire U.S. economy, which is almost $20 trillion worth a year. So, yes, there would be an economic impact, but it's going to be felt bigger in certain places of the country. And you know, that's why you see, for instance, the farmers or, you know, the lobster fishermen in Maine. You see these kind of pockets where certain communities are really going to get hurt by these tariffs, and particularly by Chinese retaliation. Another way to look at it is what's going to happen to the average consumer, to you and to me and to many of the families across the country. And at the moment, when we run the numbers, you're looking at a hit. If President Trump, say, puts on these extra $200 billion in tariffs, you're looking at about a $200 to $250 extra that most families in the United States would have to pay when they go shopping, because we buy so much goods from China and they would suddenly be more expensive. You know, everything from TVs to cell phones to kids' sporting equipment. So again, $200 to $250, think about that. That's not nothing. But the average family in the United States is going to get a tax cut this year of around $800, $800 to $900. So again, you are erasing some of the benefit, but you are not erasing all of it at this point.
Yeah, you know, we've spent time here talking about China, but yesterday the president did another swipe at Canada at this NFIB meeting, I believe. He mentioned that Canadians are coming across the border to buy tennis shoes in the United States and going back. That's, you know, part of the thing he's doing, too, is going after our allies on this.
Yeah, and that doesn't seem to be backing down either. And there's a lot of concern that the United States might pull out of the World Trade Organization, which would further rile trade with Europe, with Mexico, with Canada. Obviously, also threats to potentially pull out of NAFTA. So it's gotten a lot more rocky and around the world. And earlier this year, when we were talking, and it just seemed like Trump would threaten a lot of these train actions, but then he would pull back. So a lot of people almost saw it like bluffing. He would talk a lot of bluster, and then he would scale back what he was going to do. That hasn't happened in the last weeks. Instead, he's not only put the tariffs on that he threatened to put on, he has gone even above and beyond what people thought he would do by putting tariffs on our allies for steel and aluminum. I think, honestly, and we saw this yesterday in some comments from the head of Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein, spoke yesterday in New York, and he sort of typified what I think is a pretty reasonable way to look at all this. And, you know, he sort of said, look, a lot of people agree with President Trump, especially in the business community, that China has not been acting fairly on trade, that China way too heavily restricts American businesses operating in that country. So people agree with him, and Europeans agree with him, Canadians agree with him. But the problem is, instead of really focusing on China, really focusing the world's energy on trying to get concessions from China, Trump has instead turned around and is now fighting these trade skirmishes, not just with China, but with Canada and with the European Union and with Mexico, instead of getting all of those allies to come with us in the battle against China. And that's the part that nobody really understands what the thinking is there.
Heather, always good chatting with you. Thank you for the insight.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Take care.
Heather Long from the Washington Post, economics correspondent there. Make sure you follow Heather, too, for all of the hour-by-hour hits of what's happening in the economy at by Heather Long on Twitter. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago startup LiveBeat is making a wearable device for pregnant women that allows them to monitor a fetus's heart rate. Similar to a Fitbit, the belt-like device has smart sensors that can pick up fetal heart rates and transfer data to a smartphone app, which can be monitored by moms and doctors. Amazon announced it's rolling out its hub lockers across the country. The lockers are located inside apartment complexes and allow delivery workers to leave packages in locked areas that tenants can access by keypad. Amazon says over 500,000 residents across the country now have access to the service. And Groupon announced the launch of Bienvenidos a Pilsen, a community-wide Groupon promotion that looks to drive foot traffic to businesses in Chicago's Pilsen neighborhood. Pilsen is the sixth neighborhood to participate in Groupon's Discover Downtown series, which helps Chicagoans explore different parts of the city. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Glad to have you here with us on the Wednesday edition of the opening bell. Our next guest is a world-class hacker who now runs his own cybersecurity testing company. Jack Cable has discovered vulnerabilities at some of the biggest companies, including Google, and he even consults with the Department of Defense, and he's with us this morning, the founder of Lightning Security. Jack, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
A very interesting story. Your backstory is pretty cool. But before we get going, I want you to describe a little bit about what it is that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got into hacking about 2.5 years, sophomore in high school, actually, and I participated in bug bounty program, and that's where a company will pay you money to find vulnerabilities in their systems, and they really want to know like what you can find in anything that they have, and they're really appreciative then when you find these vulnerabilities because it helps make them more secure. So I've been doing this now, like I said, for 2.5 years, and I've participated in these bug bounty programs for companies across the world, including Google, Facebook, Uber, and now pretty much every big company has these bug bounty programs and are recruiting hackers to try to discover vulnerabilities in them.
Do the companies come to you before they release the software and let you play with the software to find the bugs, or is it already in the wild when you try to find these bugs that are happening with some of this stuff?
Most of the time it's with live assets, so companies will just tell you, like Google, for instance, says any Google websites, so Google, YouTube is open. hackers are free to do whatever they want without hopefully disrupting the service in order to discover vulnerabilities.
I'm curious, how often do you find stuff? And it's probably stuff that we in the public don't even hear about. And is there big stuff out there that you find?
I participate on a fairly regular basis for a variety of companies, so I usually find vulnerabilities pretty quickly in most companies. And, yeah, I would say that there probably are many vulnerabilities. That's the nature of security. And what's cool is that a lot of times with these programs, the hackers who discover them then do a write-up, an explanation of what they found, and share that so people can become more aware of security for the future.
Is this a lucrative business? I know you founded your own company, Lightning Security, so I'm guessing that it is.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. There are hackers who do it full-time and earn well beyond what a typical, say, software engineer or security engineer earn.
This started when you were very, very young, right? I mean, you're still pretty young. Tell us how old you are and when you got the bug to go after bugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm 18 now, and I started when I was 15.
And you were doing some of this stuff in high school, weren't you?
I was, yeah. I actually just graduated from Nutrier a few weeks ago.
So what was it that got you excited about this? What was the impetus for you to see this and say, hey, you know what, this is what I want to do in life?
I'd been programming for about a few years before I accidentally kind of got my way into hacking. I was looking at a financial website and noticed that I could send a negative amount of money from myself to other users, which would end up taking money from their account and putting it into mine. So this was a pretty severe vulnerability, and I reported to the bug bounty program of the company that have the website, and just to see how grateful they were and how impactful that could have been really sparked my interest. So I learned what I could about security and found my way with other bug bounty programs, and eventually just kept going and saw what I could do.
For most of us, our interaction with technology from a negative standpoint is our information is breached, somehow our data is stolen. A lot of that has happened in the last year. There have been some high-profile cases, and every time something like that happens, our reporting is that companies and organizations are not doing enough to play defense in this matter in terms of protecting our stuff. Would you agree with that, and what more do they need to be doing?
It's definitely becoming a huge concern, and companies should be doing more. And with bug bounties, for instance, these are a great step to engage hackers who already are likely poking around on websites in order to get feedback from them and make websites more secure. So companies do need to be doing more, and companies that have these bug bounty programs are seeing returns. They're seeing that all of their assets are becoming more secure. So, in addition to, a more complete secure development cycle, having bug bounty programs really does help to make sure that there are no, there is always going to be vulnerabilities, but make sure that at least the risk of finding a vulnerability is significantly lowered.
Because this can be a very expensive thing for a company. I'm guessing it's cheaper to pay you or another one of your bug bounty colleagues to find the stuff before it becomes a big deal. But the cost of this for companies is huge, isn't it, when a breach happens?
Definitely, yeah. The cost compared to, say, of running a bug bounty program versus the cost of a breach is, nowhere close. A bug bounty program could be, if they pay well, could be at most a couple hundred thousand or low millions, but the cost of a breach could be the entire company's reputation. So because of that, companies are seeing bug bounty programs as a great way to, as a cost-effective measure to improve their security.
Let me ask you this, as somebody who's really an expert in this area, is there anything that we as consumers can do, users of this technology, to protect ourselves, or are we just completely vulnerable?
So there's definitely actions that can be taken. One is to just take notice of which websites you're giving your information. So if you give it to just some random website that you might not necessarily trust, then that information could be stolen and taken, sold somewhere else. So it's important to like only enter your information on sites that you trust, as well as just general security measures like, say, like one of the most common attack vectors now even is with phishing emails, so just to always ignore those.
We mentioned at the open that some of the places you've worked for include the Department of Defense, and you've done some stuff with the Air Force. What is that experience like?
It's been really interesting to work from a government standpoint. I would say that they're from a security perspective, they've been like very responsive and open to the findings and like proactive with running these bug bounty programs in order to help remediate a lot of the flaws that they have. And actually, I'll be working this summer then at the Defense Digital Service, who organized the Hack the Pentagon and Hack the Air Force program. So I'll be sort of coming from the other side to help improve security.
So, Jack, what is next for Lightning Security? Where do you hope to be in a year or a couple of years down the road with your company?
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start at Stanford this fall, so I'm hoping to continue with Lightning Security. And right now I don't really have like any concrete plans for the future, but I'm open to seeing where I go and seeing like what I want to continue doing with security.
Oh, very nice. Well, all the best to you, and hopefully we can stay in touch and maybe get back with you and have you back on the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love that.
All right, Jack Cable, the founder of Lightning Security. You can find more at lightningsecurity.io.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market, Dow futures pointing toward opening gains later on. Wall Street up 130 right now. NASDAQ futures up 27. S&P futures up about 10. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. It was another tough day in agricultural commodities trade at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange yesterday, as once again the war over trade and retaliation continued. And a top trade advisor at the White House said China has underestimated President Donald Trump's resolve to move forward with tariffs unless Beijing changes its, quote, predatory trade practices. And that came after comments diminished the chances of a negotiated settlement to a looming trade war between the world's economic superpowers. At one point yesterday, soybeans were down more than 50 cents a bushel. They ended down 19 and a quarter cents at 889, putting them below the $9 level. And wheat futures down 10 cents a bushel at 477 and three quarters. Corn down 2 1/4 cents, 353 and a quarter. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today, Wednesday, June 20th, we'll get an application, a look at mortgage applications from the Mortgage Banker Association. The EIA Petroleum Status Report is also due out. The Commerce Department releases the current trade deficit for the first quarter, and the National Association of Retailers releases existing home sales for May. Also, American Outdoor Brands reports earnings, and the Senate Finance Committee has a hearing today on tariffs. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, June the 20th.